You're listening to the We Speak Common podcast network. For more information and to support the show, head to wespeakcommon.com.
Hello and welcome to a brand new episode of the D&D podcast for everyone, because here we speak common. This is the show brought to you in partnership with The Dice Dungeon and Describe. The Dice Dungeon is your one-stop shop for all things D&D, from premium dice sets to rolling trays and adventures, and you can use the code WESPEAKCOMMON to get 10% off your entire order at the Dice Dungeon's website. We're also brought to you by Describe. If you're looking for crafted box text written by professional creative writers, maybe you're looking for ambience and music, or even gorgeous maps to use on your virtual tabletops, then Describe have you sorted. They're spelled D-S-C-R-Y-B, add a dot com on the end. That's the website, and you can get 10% off your subscription right now when you use the code COMMON at checkout. Both of the links to our partners are in the descriptions below. This week, I'm joined by James to talk about the Book of Many Things. We finally got our hands on the physical copy. We want to talk about the book, the deck, and how to use them. Welcome to We Speak Common. And James, welcome to another episode of the most stellar podcast this side of the Rock of Brawl. How you doing?
I'm pretty good. This is my favourite podcast, hence why I keep coming back.
Is it the only podcast you listen to / go on?
I can neither confirm nor deny.
Okay, great. I'm glad that we've crossed that off the list. Good. Fantastic. I'm going to preemptively warn everybody that we've sat down to record this, and I think that I'm getting one of my horrible debilitating migraines and my vision is going. So I might start slurring some words. I promise it's not the large glass of wine that I'm nursing. Genuinely isn't. Probably shouldn't be drinking that right now, but I am. So just bear with me. But that means that any sections of the book that we need to read, James is probably going to read, because I'm losing my sight. It'll come back eventually, but I actually think it's starting to come back already, so we should be fine. But just in case, that's what's going on. There's some context for you. James, how are you? Because I'm clearly a mess.
I'm all right. I'm in a bit of a weird situation right now. I've got a foot in a pan of salt water.
Yeah. I mean, this is prime podcasting scenario.
So, like, you know, one foot in the pan, one foot out. Just for those people wondering what on earth, why has he got his foot in a pan of salt water? Think I've got an infection of the toe. Not sure. This usually helps it, but we'll see.
Man. We should, yeah, it's we're oversharing, but that's fine. Good. Well, I'm glad that you have your foot in a bowl of salty water. Is that all the update we get from
that's,
you?
That's about it. Other than that, I'm pretty good.
Okay, good. Good. I'm glad. I am also pretty good. Apart from the incoming migraine. But apart from that, living life, mate. Fun story from life. I know some people love that we do a little catch up at the beginning of these episodes. Some people hate it. So, hey, it's my podcast. I do what I want. I haven't spoken to James all week. Fun update from my life. I sent my mum some flowers today.
Yeah.
I sent them a few days ago. They arrived today. And I thought, I don't need to put that there from me on the card. I'll write something that's so obviously from me and it'll be fine. And
I know exactly where this is going.
She thought she had a secret admirer, bless her. She messaged me about half. Oh, so first I got a message from the service. So I used an online service to send her flowers, because we live miles away, 120 miles between us. And there's no reason, I just sent her flowers for the hell of it. But I got a reply, an email from the service saying, insert name here, loves your flowers. But you didn't put your name on it and they want to thank you. We don't give out your information in case you want to be anonymous, but we're telling you that you should reach out and let them know. And I was like, oh, that's funny. I'll let her sit on it for a while and then I'll call her after work and tell her that they're from me. And about 20 past three, which is like prime, like me in the middle of like the busiest day, part of my day at work, she texts me like, did you send me some flowers? Like, yes, I did. I did. But apparently all of her friends think she had a secret admirer now. So I said, well, you should.
They don't need to know.
Let them think that. But then she called me at the end of the day and was like, well, I called this friend and then I called this friend and then I called your sister. I was like, so you didn't at one point think that maybe I'd sent you some flowers. So, okay, that's been my day. I've also been very much spending all of my day thinking about our campaign, which regular listeners will know is on a very long pause.
Yeah.
We put our Timber Donation campaign onto an early winter break. So we do a winter break every year. And we were talking about this on the Discord server today as well, because it prompted me to ask about people taking breaks in their campaigns, when and why, that kind of thing. We always take a winter break for the holiday season. And we usually take a break in September when you go back to work as a teacher. Those are our kind of scheduled breaks each year. So we have a summer break and a winter break.
Yeah.
Our winter break started early this year because it just kind of fell into a good point in the game. And then we also knew that we wanted to get back, or we wanted to all get together for our session back, which is happening next weekend from when we're recording.
That's soon.
Yeah. This is why I've been spending all of my waking hours thinking about the campaign, because I'm trying to get myself back into it. Because I looked at the calendar, I worked it out. Session 77 was on the 27th of October.
Jesus.
Session 78 is on the 17th of February. Yeah. So that is nearly, bar 10 days, 4 months.
Oh, I think that's
the longest planned break we've ever had.
I think it is, because I think previously we maybe did like a month.
Mm.
That's usually what the winter break is. It's about a month in length.
It's usually about a month and a half, I think. But yeah, it's about that. And I think the September one is usually about a month. But yeah, so quadruple that.
At the very least, we've had the tyranny campaign to tide us over.
Yes, but the thing that I'm worried about is that, so I'm not worried about it's not that we've not had any D&D, but the thing that I'm worried about is that whenever we get back together after a month's break, we're all absolutely mental.
Yeah.
Add on top of that the fact that we're going to be in person, which adds to that.
Always seems to end up really chaotic if we've not done it for a while.
Yeah. So I've suggested today that we get together for an hour this week just to reintroduce ourselves to the campaign, go over the story so far, basically do like a session zero, reintroduce our characters. Because like there's stuff that's happened that you're not going to remember that I know, because I'm DMing, I know the campaign, I know it's crucial that you remember. I'm so, like I said to Wesley yesterday, I was like, do you remember this? Do you remember that? And he's like, oh yeah, there's this thing happening and there's this and there's that. And I went, Wesley, you've missed a very crucial part of that. And he's like, what? I was like, well, there's this. And he's like, oh my God, dude, I've forgotten all these things. And I was like, Wes, this is like the ramifications of you not knowing this going into this session are critical to your survival.
What did you forget?
Oh, just so much. Like just little things, just little bits. He was like, I don't even know the name of our NPC we've got with us. I was like, that's not good, Wesley, because she is a driving force for you and your character. So can you remember?
She's no, Chilton. I can't. I know she's Chilton and I know exactly where we got L. and everything. Oh, nope, it's not coming.
Lucanu.
That's it. I knew it was Lou something.
Yeah.
Lucanu. Yeah, because we got out of the mirror and all that stuff.
So yeah, so I think we'll get everyone back together. I mean, luckily I'm talking to you now. I can speak to Wesley whenever I want, because I live with him. I'm seeing Dave on Saturday, so I can talk to him about his character and stuff. Ray, obviously, I think is the tricky one because he's in America, but we'll make it work. So yeah, so just like spending every waking minute remembering everything and just like replaying the set pieces in my mind and like going through the playlists and doing like, I've got all these lines that a Serac could say during the fights. Do you want a sneak peek?
I've had many sneak peek, but I'll take more.
Have you? What, of lines?
Yeah, you've shown me lines before.
Oh, okay. Well, that's not good that I've not remembered that. I've written out the previously today. So I've started getting back into prep. So I'm going to take all the prep that I've done before and put it into a new, cleaner, fresher document.
Yeah.
Because, you know, we're 2 weeks away now. The eternal refrain of humanity, pleading ignorance, begging for mercy. Please help me. I don't understand. That's him like mocking me.
Actually, it's quite hard to read. My sight eyesight is not good, so you might, you won't get many of these. I've got it so far down my notes. Where is it? Lions for Rack. Here we go. Not that. I can't tell you any of that stuff.
Even in his migraine adult state, he can still hold the secrets in.
I really can't read. You all have tried valiantly to stop me, but this will be your tomb. That one's a bit weak. Let me find a better one. Where's one for... where's one for... Evil is built into the very nature of the universe. Every world spins in pain. If there is any kind of supreme being, it is up to me to become his superior.
Ooh.
Ooh, just like good, like, Acerak vibey things that I've written out for his fight. So I'm excited to, like,
You know, you want to know who, for some reason, I'm now randomly pitching Acerak as?
Go on.
Death from Supernatural, which actually fits really well with what he's going to do.
Death from Supernatural was one of the inspirationals. That's a perfect parallel. There's a few, there's about four or five inspirations that I've taken for Acerak, and he was one of them. So yeah, well done.
Boom, just need to figure out the other four.
You won't get them all. There's more than that. There's loads. I've taken inspiration from loads of different places, but he's meant to be this like otherworldly, immortal, timeless being. Because he is, but yeah.
Won't be by the time we're finished with him.
Please.
Maybe not next session, but in another 100 sessions time.
If it's 100 sessions, we're never finishing this campaign. We will die before we finish this campaign.
We'll see.
Hopefully it'll be another 50 max.
Yeah.
If we end this campaign at 150 sessions, I'm happy.
That's a good solid number.
It's a good solid number. And I reckon that'd be about 3.5-4 years. Yeah. We're coming up to 3 now. For Tomb. We're about 4 on this world state. The other thing I just thought of that I was going to say right before we move on to the actual topic of the episode was we were talking about Acerak. Inspiration, lines. So we're doing our final session. We're playing it on Saturday the 17th. It's not final. Final for Arc 2. I keep calling it final. It's not. The fight with the Acerak, the Atropel, and the Soulmonger. So we're doing it on the 17th of February. And we're all in person. Ray is in America, so he will be on Discord. So we're going to be half here, half there. So it's a weird setup, but what I'm thinking of doing, I pitched it to a few of the Patreon supporters today and a couple of them said, yeah, this sounds like something we'd be interested in. Not a plug, kind of a plug, but if you join the Patreon, you basically become my counsel and I pitch ideas to you and you go, yeah, we want that or no, we don't want that. So if you want input on the kind of stuff we're putting out, join the Patreon. But what I might try and do is record the audio and visual, put it all together and release it just as a, hey, here's our final fight. Because something we did at the end of Descent a long time ago, when you were running that campaign for us, was we just played it in the server and we let people come and watch and jump in and out of the final fight, which was a lot of fun. And people really liked that. So so keep an eye out for that. I don't know if the quality will be good enough to release. I'll record it all. Then I've got to string it all together. And then if it's good and it's worth listening to, I'll release it. Keep an eye out for that. Anyway, let's talk about the I've just waffled on. Let's talk about the Book of Many Things.
Let's.
So this book, and I use the term book lightly because it's not just book, it's two books and some cards. It has had a troubled release. Got delayed a few times. The physical got delayed. Digital's been out on D&D Beyond for a while. It's here now. It's out. It's in the world. Both you and I have a copy. You've had yours slightly longer than me.
Yeah.
So I literally got mine yesterday from the Dice Dungeon. The guy sent it to me in the post. Very lovely people.
Got mine from them as well. I don't know why mine came quicker than yours, but it did.
I don't know. That's what happens when you're a customer and not a client, I suppose. You get prioritized. I go to Ben directly because obviously we work together.
He's not bitter at all.
No. It's fine. You get to read the book before me. So you've probably read a bit more than me, but I did have a good flick through yesterday, and I want to talk about, like, what the fuck is this book? How do you use it? All that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Where do we start? Should we start with presentation?
Yeah, let's start with presentation.
Okay, have you got the limited edition copy?
I have got the limited edition copy.
So have I.
Because I like to get the limited edition copies because I really like the covers.
Because, James, they're limited edition and you are a sucker.
I'm like a D&D collecty goblin at this point.
Yeah, I mean, we both are.
Yeah. But it arrives and I was expecting very much like the Planescape set and then the other kind of sets to do where, you know, you have the book in a nice like slip case.
Yes. Yeah. I thought that too.
And you know, that in the slip case with the deck supplement in the slip case as well. And it arrives. If you've received your physical copy, you'll know in this cardboard box is my best way of describing it, which to open it, you have to like tear. It's like opening an Amazon package. The idea was you would tear the thing and then it could open. But then there's no way of resealing it. There's no way of getting rid of the flap so you could like show off the spines of your book.
So the packaging is, I think, designed to be packaging. It's designed to, you open the book, you get it out, you throw it away.
Yeah, but I don't know. Which is a shame. With the delay and everything, if there was originally meant to be a slipcase that it goes in, I'm not sure. But it would have been nice to have a slipcase that isn't made of cardboard to hold all the stuff together.
Yeah, so you've kept your cardboard box. I threw mine out.
Yeah.
Because it's so cheap and it's like plasticky cardboard. I was like, I don't need this bit. But it does mean that on my bookshelf now, so you get physical sets of cards, the deck of many things, and they come in a little box, a nicely presented box that has its own very thin, very flimsy cardboard sleeve. And then you have the book too. It would be nice if the book and the box fit in a sleeve together, like all the other things, but they just don't.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I know there was a lot of production issues as well. So like my box with my cards in, the front is slightly bent. I'm not sure if it's meant to shut with a magnet. It kind of feels like it should, but it doesn't.
That's interesting. I don't think I have that issue. Let me just pull mine off the shelf here.
It's sort of like the front bit kind of slightly bulges forward a bit.
I got to say, the box itself is lovely and hefty and it looks nice. There's no denying the actual product presentation is great.
And then, you know, I wasn't filled with hope, as it were, when, you know, I opened my package and there's literally a white cardboard box with basically saying, here's some spare cards. New set of cards because there were some production issues.
So I'm of two minds of that. So I must say, I don't think it was meant to close with a magnet. Mine does not have a bend on it. So having a bend in yours is slightly annoying. But again, sorry, I'm knocking the microphone trying to put this back up. That could be from anything. That could have happened in transit for all you know. Who knows? So there were some issues. The reason there was a delay was there were production issues. And I also got a white cardboard box that says, hey, I can actually tell you what it says. I've got it here.
Yeah.
It literally says, not for resale. Great. Love that. Due to manufacturing defects in the deck of many things cards, these replacement cards are being provided free of charge. If you have any questions or concerns, please contact us online at support.wizards.com. And it's got a big barcode on the back. And if you open it, the decks are split into three separate decks in the box.
Yeah.
So they are split into three separate decks in this box. And they are silicone wrapped and sealed. So you basically get...
two decks.
Two copies of each deck.
I must say, you know, I did look through my cards. I didn't immediately spot any problems with ones apart from the one thing, and I've literally just spotted this now for some reason. Like the printing of, I think, my middle set of cards, it's not quite centered. And that's okay. It. So it's, you know, there's a little bit more border on one side than the other.
So I've not seen any issues in my cards. I think that sending another set per deck is nice.
To be fair, yeah, that is quite nice of them, yeah.
I mean, I don't know what's to say that what happens if both sets have defects, who knows?
Yeah.
I don't know why I would need them, but it's nice to have as a collector, which feels like really wanky to say. It's nice to have a sealed set of cards.
Yeah.
Because now I feel like I can use the cards I have at a table, get them all bent, scratched, creased, whatever, and
got a nice set
still
left.
Still have a nice set left, except for display purposes in the box. Exactly. So I'm not mad about that. I'm, you know, it is what it is, I suppose. But yeah, that's presentation of the cards and the books. So when you open the box with the cards, you also get another book, which I didn't realize you get.
Yeah.
Which goes through all of the cards, and it also tells you how you can use them to, air quotes, divine in the game. So you can use them to like tell you what's going to happen in your session in world, which is cool and thematic, and I've not really read through it, but it's a cool concept because they are basically tarot cards.
Yeah. I mean, I'm not 100% like, I like the idea of the book and the stuff it's got in it, that smaller one. I'm not 100% sold on like the landscape layout.
Oh, this is the book in the cards. Yeah,
yeah. Like I'd have just preferred it being the usual portrait layout, but that's just preference, I think.
Yeah. It's like a complimentary extra. It's kind of like a photo book in a way.
Yeah. I can see why it's that way as well. Cause it's got, you know, on each page, it's got nice big pictures of the cards and then what it means if it's upright, what it means if it's reversed, all that stuff.
And I think if you were going to play a character, because I know that it's existed online, people wanting to play like diviner characters and characters who see the future and roll dice and draw cards and things. If you want to play that kind of character, this is the book for you because you can do it with these cards. It gives you like a thematic way of doing it. There's not really any rules set to it, but there's a fun way of doing it. And also one of my favorite things in the book, flicking through, and I say this being a spiritual hippie boy in real life, there is a zodiac system for D&D. So there's star signs that come with a little chart for like a birthstone, what the star sign is good for. It gives you a little like general horoscope for that star sign. So, you know, you can in world as a character be like, well, when were you born? And the other character can go, I don't know, like midsummer, and you go, oh, well, that means you're this star sign, this is your birth sign, your birthstone, this is that, and that's fun role play stuff. So, you know, there is good this is what I'll say, the content in the book is good, but we'll get to the book in a minute.
So I
think the cards are nice. I like them. And seeing as there have been third party products that are literally this, the deck of many things, as tarot cards that you can use at your table, it only makes sense that Wizards have gone and eventually done their own version of that. It's nice that they've added to it.
Yeah. I mean, you know, in the game, I think the deck has 22 cards, I want to say.
Yeah, so there is a history, like the history is written out in the front of the book, but it was originally 18 and now it's 22.
Yeah, now 22. But the current one is given you. There are rules for sort of like 44 new cards as well. So, you know.
Yeah.
So if you want to expand your deck to past the 18, 22, you can do quite easily. There is a good amount of cards in there.
Okay. So you're kind of, I feel like this is a perfect segue to talk about what's in this book and what it is, because that's kind of the main.
So are we moving over to the main book?
We're going over to the main book, yeah. So the book of many things. I don't like. Let's not talk about anything but the content, James. Okay. Don't talk about anything but purely the content, because I know that we'll get sidetracked. Right now, we're going to only talk about the content of this book. So, what is the book of many things? Right. The deck of many things, of course, is a magic item from D&D history, and it is in the Dungeon Master's Guide. Great. That you get that deck of cards. You also get an extra 22 cards. And this book gives you a magic item called the deck of many more things, which is the other 22 cards, right?
Yeah.
So effectively, you've got two deck of many things there. Great. The deck of many things historically is known to upend and cause upheaval in D&D campaigns because it can outright kill you. It can send you off to dungeons. It can make you rich. It can give you take levels away, give levels. It does all these random crazy things. So the deck of many more things is a much more relaxed, balanced, chilled out version. It gives you cards that allow you to speak to plants. It gives you a card that literally makes a dragon egg spawn next to you, which instantly hatches and sees you as its parent. There's, you know, these fun little... Yeah, I knew you'd put your eyebrows up at that one, James. There's fun little things in here. There's cards that do some not so nice things. There's cards that do some good, that some very nice things. There's middle grounding cards. There's one that just turns you into a random beast. Like, you know, cool, great.
That's the stuff we like. The random nature of the deck and the possibility.
But it's not world ending,
no,
right?
No, it's not world ending. It's not campaign ending. It is just fuck with your players enough to be funny.
Yeah, so great. So good. So it kind of instantly you've got the classic deck and you've got the new deck, which is a bit more chilled. What this means is that effectively you have two decks right there. You can combine them to make a mega deck, or you can start making combination decks. So you can start, because it lists out all the cards, you can combine those cards in any way. So as a DM, you could create a deck of many things that is disgustingly horrible and only has bad things in it. You can make one that's got really, really good things in it and gives you levels and jewels and money. You can make one that's stacked towards good things but has one really, really bad thing in it.
Yeah.
And it's a risk.
And the book does have in it as well, it does have suggested like decks in there.
Yeah.
So depending on what section of the book you're looking in, so say you're looking in like the rogue section.
Hey, now we're only talking about the content, James. Not the layout.
I am only talking about the content. So if you're looking in the rogue part of the book.
So if you go to the bit that has that bit in it.
I'm talking about the class options and things, I think. Then it would have like an appropriately thematic deck related to that thing, which is quite good. So it is reducing that prep load on your hand because it gives you a customized version of the deck. And then obviously if you still don't like it, you can chop and change it.
What I want to do with this book, like instantly getting this box set, I'm calling it a box set because I think that's what it is. It's not just a book, right?
Yeah.
Getting this box set, immediately what I want to do is I want to put a quest in my campaign where you find a deck made out of 18 cards.
Yeah.
And you then have to go and start finding the others. And once you get 22... you can use the deck. But as you find cards, you can then decide in world what cards you put in the deck.
That's cool.
So imagine you've gone into a dungeon, you found a treasure hoard, and there's a deck of 18 cards there, and it's a few of the good cards, a few of the bad ones, but it's mostly kind of like not great. It's like kind of like... Yeah. They're okay, but they're not amazing. And then you, as you're adventuring, you start finding more. So once you get to 22, you can go, okay, put all these 22 together and we have a deck. But as you adventure, you'd be like, oh, well, we found the beast card. Well, do we want to add the beast card? Not really, because if we wait, we might find the gem card and the gem card's going to give us loads of riches if we pull it. So let's wait for that and add that in.
An idea I've just had to sort of add to that is it does make clear in like the start a bit of, I mean, it's the smaller book, that there is this idea of no one's quite sure exactly what the deck of many things is. Is it an artifact? Is it somewhat sentient? Does it have its own will? And like, if you're doing like a card collecting journey, you could have it so that there is a sentience in the deck or in whatever contains the deck. And if you don't want your players to immediately be able to start drawing, they need to have a certain number of cards. And the thing in the deck, once you've put enough cards, as you put more cards into, the sentience of the deck almost sort of improves and it gets better and more powerful. And over time, it's just there trying to convince you to draw from it all the time.
You've got it. So we'll talk about this at the end of the episode about like how we'd use this, but just to tease you a little bit and keep you listening to the episode, because of course I want you to keep listening. I would make the deck a one-of-a-kind item, an artifact that only exists once. And almost kind of like, you know, like the Dragon Balls in Dragon Ball. When you when you cast your wish, they scatter. I'd do that. Yeah. So you find, you go out and you start collecting the cards, and the deck is complete when you put 22 cards together, but you only use those 22. So let's say you collect all 44 cards, right? That's the goal. Collect all 44 cards so that you can stack the deck in your favor. Near impossible to do. But if you find 22 cards, you put them all together, you shuffle the deck, say the incantation, and then you can start pulling from it. But once you have all pulled from it, so you do it as a group, once you've all pulled from the deck, you the cards, those cards that were used, scatter and disappear and go off to different realms or different parts of the world, and you have to go and find them again. So that's how I would use it, but we'll get to that later. Anyway, so that's kind of the draw to this set, right? Is the deck, the new deck, the combinations of decks you can make. Here's how to use the deck. That kind of thing is what you'd expect in the book. And it does kind of give you that. For example, there is a card called Dungeon. It's one of the original cards. It sends you to a dungeon. You get locked away forever. And it's one of the bad cards of the original deck. And I think in the DMG, without looking, it just says the player that draws this card instantly disappears. They get locked away in a dungeon. They don't know where it is. We don't know where it is. Could be anywhere. The other players don't know where they are. Sucks to be them.
Yeah.
This book gives you a dungeon. So it gives you this planetary sphere, which is it kind of looks like a Death Star, this giant dungeon that's falling apart. And it's a horrible place. You don't want to be there. You're probably going to die. But if you pull the dungeon card, that's where you go. And then you've got to try and either break out or break in to get your friend.
Looking at the picture of sort of the dungeon sphere as well, it does look very sort of Death Star-y. Mm. And they've kind of made it so that it's like very much a cross-section of it. So you can see inside it. It's got like loads of layers. It looks like it has some kind of like molten core at the center of it as well.
It's not a good place.
No. And like the lore behind it is really cool as well. It drifts through the astral sea. Centuries ago, an unknown species of intelligent beings built the sphere to capture and contain specimens from across the cosmos. It's basically like a space lab.
Yeah. So that's really cool.
Yeah.
And there's more examples of that. For example, one of the cards gives you a keep. I think it's the throne card. You basically become the lord of a keep. This book gives you a keep that's full of monsters, and you have to go and clear the monsters out for the keep to be yours. Great. Brilliant. It gives you something to run. There are a couple of factions. There's the Solar Bastion, which are a bunch of knights. There's the Moon something. They're like a thieves guild. So
all of those come with adventure hooks as well, a headquarters, a couple of important NPCs, the kind of standard stuff you'd expect.
So there's good shit in this book, right?
Yeah.
There is good stuff. All the stuff you'd expect, like, okay, how do I, like, what, like, I've pulled this card. What do I do with that now? And obviously, this is the kind of deck, so I'm going to move the microphone. So, a bit of noise, I need to sit up. I'm getting too into this conversation, James. this is the kind of magic item that you don't run without preparing. So you prepare for those cards to come up if you're going to run this deck. If you don't do that, you're silly. But this book helps with that. And then there's other stuff that you'd expect, like magic items, spells, backgrounds, character options. That kind of stuff is in this book too. There are some monsters in here. There's a little bit of everything. I think, personally, that the content of this book is good.
Yes.
I
agree with that.
Content-wise, this is one of the books I've been most interested in. Not only in the last year, because WotC have had an interesting... That's a nice way of putting it. They've had an interesting year. The last 2-3 years, none of their books have hit the mark for me.
Fizzbands
was good. Yeah, I'll give you that. Fizzbands was good. Looking at my bookshelf, so now I'm now doing the thing I hate when I listen to the episodes back when I'm editing. So I'm really sorry, future Ben. I'm talking away from the mic. I don't have Glory of the Giants. I don't have Well, Fizzbands was before that. I have Fizzbands. I have Keys of the Golden Vault, but
Yeah, I mean, like I've got all of these, and I don't really use a lot of them. Like
no.
Like Big Fish Giant, like Giants Guide to Giants, I can't remember its full title, is a fairly decent book, but it's a little bit too niche. Like it's just it's only relevant if you are literally doing giant stuff or have a giant related character. Whereas I feel like, I don't know, Fizzbands somehow is a bit more useful, but probably because I'm running the Tyranny of Dragons adventure.
That's
which
because
helps.
You're running Tyrannies and your specialty subject is dragons. So yes. You know, there is that.
But like, you know, those adventure ones like Keys to the Golden Vault and stuff. I think I've looked through them the once and then they've just kind of sat.
Yeah. They're good for inspiration, and I think they're good for DMs who have, I think they're good for newer DMs who want to run something and don't know what. Or I want a book they can work through.
You want something you can just quickly run, just pull off the shelf as well. They're not too bad for that.
But you say that, but I mean, you and I had this conversation recently. I was looking for something to run and I flicked through Radiant Citadel and I flicked through, what was the other one? Candlekeep.
That's the one, yeah.
I flicked through all three of those books. And I even went online and said, like, okay, rank the adventures in these anthologies for me and tell me which ones are good. And I read all of the synopsi, whatever. I went through all of them and none of them tickled my fancy. And even then, the ones that did, I started reading them and I thought, I can't be bothered to rewrite this to make it good for me. I'd rather just come up with my own thing. So yeah. I think for a DM that kind of knows what they want or knows their style like me, like I know what I want to, I know the themes that I want to hit on and you know, the kind of things I like to do. And, you know, it is good to break your strides, but I think it's better for inspiration in that sense. But anyway, that's a complete tangent.
Yeah.
My point is, I think the content in this book is fantastic. Favorite thing that I found in there, and I'm wondering if you've seen this, James, because we'll talk about why you might not have in a minute, is one of the air quotes magic items, the telescopes. Have you seen the telescopes?
I haven't seen the telescopes, no.
Okay, hang on. I'm going to attempt to open the book and find it because my vision's coming back to me. Okay, I think I know where it is. Hang on. There's some really good art in these books.
Ah, here we go.
Have you found the telescopes?
Is it the telescopic transporter?
Yes.
So that is...
Hang on. Got it. Here we go. Page 105. Telescopic travel. Certain magical telescopes allow their users not only view the stars, but also travel among them. Of course, as with most types of powerful technology, the use of such a device comes with significant risks. The following magic item is one example of a telescope that enables interstellar travel. Telescopic transporter, wondrous item, legendary. This enormous telescope is basically like a, what are they called? An observatory telescope.
Yeah, it's huge.
It doesn't have to be, but it is. Allows you to view distant celestial objects, including stars, wild space systems, and astral sea phenomenon, like the cities of deities or the petrified husks of dead gods. After spending 1 hour calibrating the telescope, you can attempt to travel to the planet or celestial body at which the telescope is currently pointed. At the end of the hour, make a DC 17 intelligence arcana check. On a successful check, you and 8 other willing creatures touching the telescope, along with everything all travelers are wearing and carrying, safely teleport to unoccupied spaces at the intended destination. On a failed check, a mishap occurs. The DM rolls on the telescopic mishaps table or determines the mishap, or chooses the mishap that's good for the campaign. There are 6 of them, so you roll a d6. So the first one, on a 6, travelers arrive at their intended destination, but each appear coated in a harmless slime. Mm-hmm. 5, travelers appear on a different planet or celestial body in the wild space system nearest to their target destination. So you just overshoot.
Yeah.
4, a creature from the astral sea, such as a Githyanki knight, appears within 60 feet of the telescope. The DM decides its attitude. 3, excess cosmic energy overloads the telescope, causing it to explode. Each creature within 60 feet of the telescope takes 8d6 necrotic damage. Any humanoid who survives this damage is transformed into a different kind of creature as if it had been subject to the reincarnate spell. Two, travelers appear on a different plane of existence determined randomly or chosen by the DM. And one, the travelers appear adrift in the astral sea. So as a clever player, you could like prepare for those things, but I don't know. I like it.
Yeah.
I think that is such a cool item. I mean,
you know, especially when, you know, it has a little sidebar about this idea of a rescue mission with like the dungeon, which you mentioned earlier.
Mm-hmm.
The dungeon has one in it.
Mm-hmm.
So you could use it to get out. Equally, you can use one to get in. So if you want to rescue a friend, you go on this quest to find this telescopic transporter, use that to get in, help bust them out. That's a cool mission.
Here's the fun thing too, the telescopic transporter doesn't go with you.
No.
It's a one-way trip.
I do like the idea of it being huge. Like, I feel like it should be somewhere massive.
Yeah.
Rather than like a little,
Yeah. I don't know. I like the idea of like an old sailor's telescope being one. Really like obscure.
Someone just picks up this old looking telescope in like a weird cursed item shop and just goes, oh, and then poof, they're gone.
I mean, it doesn't work like that, but yeah.
No. That'd be like a cursed version.
Well, there you go. I mean, the point I'm trying to make is there's cool shit in this book. And if you two would like a copy, why not head to the Dice Dungeon? There's a link in the description below.
Smooth.
Such a corporate snub. In all seriousness, though, both James and I got our copies from the Dice Dungeon. Yes, I know we're partnered with them and you know, all of that, but we pay for them. We buy the books. Like, we're not, you know, we're not that set out. If you do want to get a copy, I was going to say local. They're local to us because we're in the UK, but they ship worldwide. You want to support small businesses and people who love the hobby just as much as we do. Ben and Dave, who run the Dice Dungeon, are amazing guys, great guys, and God, I sounded a bit like Trump then. That's a really good deal. They're great guys. Go and check them out. There's a link down below. You can get dice. They've got premium sets like glass and crystal and all of that. They've got cheaper sets for resin. They've got a bag of fates, which are random dice. If you just want to buy some dice and have that feeling of like pulling a random set, it's really, really good for the dopamine. It's a good little hit. Trust me, I know. And of course, they've got the books and rolling trays and other things available, bags, all that kind of stuff. Go and check them out. They're a great little business. And they have been working with us now for, God, I don't even know, like 2 years, maybe 3 years, maybe even longer. I don't know. It's been so long. Ben and I were talking about this the other day, but supporting them supports us. If you use the code WESPEAKCOMMON at checkout, that gets you 10% off your entire order. Gives us a little kickback too. So if you're going to buy some D&D stuff, why not go to them and support us as well? And of course, if you are going to be running some weird kind of like jumpy around telescopic transporter dungeon planescape style adventures, you're going to want to be able to describe all that shit to your players. Describe is the way to do that. Spelled DSCRYB. Adam.com on the end. That's the website. There's a link to them down below too. We've been partners with Describe for a while as well. And I always like when I spy on what all the other D&D content creators are doing. Because I'm also a fan. I like to watch it all. And it's always fun to see Describe pop up as an ad read on another content creator's content. I'm like, oh, we're friends. We're connected. But they have professional creative writers doing the hard work for you. Writing scenes, monsters, magic items, spells, like everything you could think of under the sun. It's box text like you find in your favorite adventures, but for you to use in any campaign. And they've got so much, like over 10,000 scenes now. It's crazy. They've also got maps, they've got music, they've got sound effects, ambience, just so much going on and it's always growing. Go and check out the website, link below. There's loads of stuff on there for free that you can just use right now. Why would you not do that? It's a free resource. But if you want to get more, if you want to get greater access and you want to have an input on what they've got going on there, then you can subscribe and you can use the code COMMON at checkout to get 10% off your subscription for 2 years. Gets you that discount every month for 2 years, as long as that subscription stays valid. So if you cancel it and restart it, it won't, but if you keep it running, then it will. Go check them out. They're great guys too. And their link is down below, as well as Ben and Dave's The Dice Dungeon. Should we talk about the issues with this book?
Yes, let's.
You've been waiting for this bit.
I have. The contents page. Oh my God.
It's not like, even just the contents page, James. It goes beyond that.
It does, but...
The entire layout of this book is insane.
Yeah, and like, I kind of, like, a little bit respect what they've tried to do with the contents page.
Yeah.
Because, you know, each chapter is very much themed to a card you would draw from the deck.
Yeah, so they're all themed after the original 22 cards from the deck of many things.
With, I think, a couple of renames on some of them.
Yeah, two cards have been renamed. So the Idiot is now Puzzle and... Yeah,
and the Vizier is now the Sage.
Yeah, there you go. Those are the two that have changed names.
Yeah. So they're themed in that way, but what that has now resulted in is just stuff is everywhere. And
so... it's not even just that. It doesn't make sense. And I put this into test... last night I sat down with Wesley, having looked through the book before, took a break, went and had a shower, came back downstairs, was like, right, I want to go and find a specific thing in this book. I'm going to look for it. And it frustrated me so much. Wesley was sat across from me. We have our computers set up in the same room. It's quite cute. He was sat at his and he could see me get frustrated. He went, what's wrong? And I was like, let me just show you what's wrong. And I went, Wesley, what's something you would want in this book? He went, oh no, go and find me a magic item. Cool. Which magic item? He's like, what do you mean? I was like, well, it could be in this chapter, or it could be in this chapter, or it could be under this random subtitle called Magic Treasures, because those are magic items too, but that's in a different chapter. He was like, what? And at that point, he was then, of course, intrigued, and he agreed, this book is insane. Yeah. So now, that's three people telling you it's
there
insane.
There is a master table of the magic items that you can turn to that is listed on the contents page.
And shouldn't be needed.
Then you find it, and it tells you what chapter it's in. But then that's a lot of steps to just find magic items you want. Like
the best way I can sum this up is: so you have your normal contents table at the front, right?
Yeah.
But then you flick two pages in, and it then has a section that says where to go next, and it says, "Oh, chapter 1 to 5." These are your Dungeon Master's tools. And it says chapter 1, The Fool. This chapter is about this, this, and this. Chapter 2, Key. This chapter is about this, this, and this.
So
chapter 3.
I can say what happened to me, because this is what I did. I turned to this page, the where to go next thing. Because the first thing you always want to look at, new book, is the magic items. And I went down and I went, chapter 5, Gem. The 22 new magic items in this chapter were each inspired by a card from the deck of many things. So I go, magic items are in the gem chapter. Quite like that. All magic items in the chapter named gem. That's quite cool. I get there and I'm like, hang on. I spotted one in a list earlier in the book. That isn't here. What the hell is going on? Flick back to the main contents page and then I'm looking down like, what on earth is going on here? And then I spot it. There's like magic items dotted about in other chapters.
Yeah. So this where to go next section, it breaks down the first 5 chapters, then it breaks down the next 5, and it's like, these are your character option chapters, and it's like the rogue has this stuff, and the sage has this, and the fates has this. Then it has a section called the Celestial Suite, and it's like, this chapter is about astrological phenomenon. And you're like, okay, so for example, chapter 13, Star, that's where the zodiac sign stuff is. Okay, cool, great. The sun is about the solar bastion, the moon is about the new thieves guild. Then you've got the next is about adventure locations, and then there's another one that's adversaries and rivals, which would make you think monsters, but that's not true because there's monsters spread across this whole book. The point being, they've given you 2 contents pages, and even that doesn't...
There's effectively 4 contents pages.
Yeah, and you still don't really know where anything is.
Yeah. The 4 contents pages being the main one, the where to go next, and then the 2 master tables, and it tells you that it's on page 32 for magic items and page 175 for monsters.
Yeah. It's... But, insane.
Yeah, like I can respect what they've done there, like theme wise, but in the interest of a book and the usage of it, especially as a DM or even as a player, just wanting to look at like player options and things, or what magic items you might want to ask your DM for, it is a mess. It's difficult. It's not easy. It's not nicely laid out to help with that.
I have no doubt that there are some really cool monsters in this book that I would love to run, but I don't know because I don't want to read through the entire book to read through all the monsters because they're spread out everywhere.
Or be spending God knows how long flicking backwards and forwards from the master table to that page and then across to that chapter and then back again.
Now, there is an upside to this, and that is that you don't have to read this book cover to cover. You can literally pick it up and read a random chapter and have no context of what's come before or after in that in the book, and it still makes sense and it's all good. That's I mean, great, if that's what you're looking for, but that's not how you read a book.
Yeah.
So, you know, there's that. I don't know. I think the content in this book is great. It is let down massively by the way it's presented, purely in its organization. The art in this book is gorgeous.
Yes.
This is a lovely book to flick through. The content's great. The layout's lovely in terms of like the page layouts are nice, but there's no rhyme or reason to where anything is really.
Well,
and I think you summed it up really well in the sense that you said like, oh, I, you know, I admire what they're trying to do here.
Yeah.
But in practice, it just doesn't work.
Yeah. At least not for us. I mean, there might be someone out there who really clicks with this, but for the kind of thing we use, you know, all of the D&D books and any reference book for, like, you know, I mean, even not even in D&D, like a contents page, it needs to be easy to navigate and use.
Why have you got four of them?
Yeah.
You know? So there's one thing. The other thing I was going to say around this, it was just on the tip of my tongue and I've just lost it. The art. I said the art's really lovely.
Yes.
I have no issue with the art in this book. I think it's gorgeous. I think it's beautiful. I think the cards are really nice. I love the backs. All the backs are the same, so you can mix all the decks together.
Yeah.
I think the arts look very similar.
The cards have a nice golden border too.
Mm. Oh yeah, the edges are gilded.
Yeah.
Wesley looked at the arts and he went, "Why are they all different styles?" And I went, "The cards." Oh. He went, "Why are they all different styles?" And I went, "They're not." He went, "Yeah, they are. That one's different from that one, and that one's different from that one, and that one's different from that one." I went, "I don't see it. Personally, I don't see it." Wesley thinks all of the cards have different art styles. And he said, I would assume that either they've used different artists for the cards, which would be a weird choice, or they've used AI art for the backgrounds. And they look kind of like pastel-y. And I was like, I don't agree, but I see it.
There is a mix of artists.
Is that what it is?
It does send in to give them credit. You know, on each card, it says who's made the art for that card. So the aberration, for instance, is made by Jim Zakaria. And I don't know, I'm not a trained artist, but in fact, when I look at the aberration and then compare it to the beast, which is by Abigail Larson,
like,
they're not like horrifically different, where if I was quickly going through, I would immediately clock. But now that I'm looking next to them, like the beast seems, it's not pencil, I don't know what it is, but there is like a difference there. That to me,
I get what you're
noticeable.
Saying. I mean, I can see that there's subtle differences, but I didn't think they were that drastic. The fact that they've used different artists seems like a weird choice for me, because you would want all the cards to look similar. But then again, they do that with Magic the Gathering. All the cards have different artists, so maybe that's why they've done that. It's the same company, isn't it? So
I don't know. With like the Magic cards, the style all seems very
similar.
Very, very similar between the cards. I mean, it's been a while since I've gotten any sets of Magic, so who knows, they might have completely changed since then, but there is definitely a difference there. I can see what Wesley's saying. Like, some of them seem more drawn than others.
Maybe I haven't looked at them long enough then to notice it. Maybe that's what it is.
I mean, I only noticed it when you pointed out, but I'm not like a big art person.
So yeah, I mean, we're shitting on it a bit here, but this is the major issue with the book, and that's the
well, the content's great.
Execution. Yeah, the content's great. The content is amazing.
You don't want to just shit on it.
No, I genuinely, I am excited about using this book. I'm going to put a deck of many things at the end of the Tomb of Annihilation. It's going to happen. God. I guarantee it.
I won't,
it will
I won't,
happen.
I won't put one in my game then.
whether it's the original deck to fuck with you or my way of doing the deck or the new deck just so that you don't break the game. I don't know. We'll see what happens. But it's made me want... I mean, I've wanted to use the deck for a long time, and there's been so many conversations online about how to use the deck and use it in a way that doesn't destroy your campaign. And this book gives you that, and that's what you want. So, you know, if you are like me and you've always wanted to use the deck, then get this book. Like, the content's good, but just be prepared to have a bit of a headache looking for it.
You got to work for it. You got to work for that content.
Which isn't what you want. That's not a selling point in any way, shape, or form. But what are you going to do? Okay, let's start rounding this episode off with how we would use the book then. So for me, I haven't looked at any of the character options because fuck knows if I can find them in there. I know they exist, but I don't know where they are. There's one feat, not interested in it. There's loads of magic items. Interested in those, need to go through them. There's some spells. Again, need to look through them. All of that stuff, fun, great, immediately available to any of my players.
That is not, however, why you use the deck of many things.
No. Is it? You use the deck and thus the book because you want to use the magic item.
Yeah.
So I alluded to it earlier. For me, I think the best way to use the deck is to make it this very ancient, rare item. Who knows how it was made? Who knows why it was made? But it exists. I think it's an artifact to me.
I think that has to be a given just because it's been in D&D so long and it's got that reputation. It is, if you think about it, it's equivalent to the Eye of Vecna or the Hand of Vecna or any other like big magic.
I mean, you
item.
And I disagree about how we use the Hand and Eye in our games. For me, the Hand and Eye are unique items. There is only one of both.
Yeah.
And if you have the hand on your body, Vecna doesn't have it on him. That's how I use them. Whereas, James, you subscribe to the mentality of he's a lich, he reforms, he has his hands and eye, and the items are artifacts that he wields out there.
He can kind of choose to have them on him if he wants. But other than
both
that,
are very cool.
His influence.
Yeah, both very cool. I just like the... I think in a game where we talk about multiverses and different worlds, I hate that term. I've come to despise the term multiverse.
Yeah,
Different universes, different worlds, different, you know, the gods can be in multiple wild spaces under different pseudonyms and things, where things can be duplicate and you can go from one world to another and be supporting the same god. It's more special for there to only be one across everything. And so for there to be one deck of many things across everywhere, that makes it very powerful and special to me. So I would make it that way. And I would have it that there are 44 cards that exist. If you want to use the new ones, 22, if you just want to use the old ones. And you can use the deck when you find all 22. Good luck finding them all. And maybe it is a Dragon Ball style legend, you know, collect all 22 cards and you can change your fate forever, for better or worse. It's a risk and only a madman would do it. But it's there for you. Good luck finding them. And, you know, when you find a partial deck, let's say 10 cards, I think that's how I'd start it. The players stumble upon a partial deck, or maybe one or two, and then a partial deck. They put them together, and those cards act as then like a beacon to the others. So when you get close to a card, maybe it warms up in their pocket or something.
Yeah.
And they feel it and they go, oh, there's a card nearby. We've got to find it. When you find all 20, the deck longs to be put back together. You put the cards together and then you can draw for them. And it's the normal deck of many things rules. You have to say how many cards you're going to draw and then you have to draw that many. There is a card in the new deck when you pull it out. There's a couple actually. So let's say James says, I'm going to draw three cards, and he draws, I think it's the humanoid. You can then decide to just stop drawing then and there, regardless of how many you said you'd draw. And if there's another card, I don't know which one, that allows you to either add two more cards onto your draw or subtract two more cards from your draw. So if you said, I'm going to draw four cards, you draw two, and then the second card you draw is that card. You then go, I'm done. I'm going to take two off.
I like that.
You then don't have to draw any more. So like, that's cool. Those are cool. But I would use the deck in the same way. You have to say how many cards you're going to draw. That's it. Once you've drawn that many, you're done. You have an hour to draw those cards. If not, they all draw and happen at the same time. All that kind of stuff. All the normal deck of many things rules. But the deck has to be made out of 22 cards. Doesn't matter what 22 cards. As soon as you found 22 cards, you can draw, or you could keep looking for the rest and start making a deck that works for you. And then it's that temptation to the players. Yeah. Hey, you've got 22 cards. Do you want to draw from me? Oh yeah, but if we keep looking, we might find more good cards and we can take some of the bad ones out. Yeah, but...
You could get some real good now.
But do you want to draw from them now? And oh yeah, but other people are hunting the deck. And, you know, this can be a subplot in your game. This can just be a thing that's happening. And this is a nice way, I think, to have the cards be present in your game from the beginning, but not active and thus potentially game ending until the end of the campaign, which is usually when the deck of many things comes up, because you have to get 22 to draw.
Yeah.
And you're the DM, you can decide where and how they find cards. Or, so it's just kind of happening as the campaign goes on, or it can be the plot of the campaign. Maybe the big bad guy is insane and is collecting cards. Thus, the players have to stop him, and maybe they get 22 cards before the big bad guy and decide to draw themselves, like that kind of thing.
If I jump in with my thought there, because I mentioned the idea of it being almost sentient and how sentient you can decide for yourself. Like, the deck, in my view, is very much, it is an engine of chaos. It's not chaotic good, it's not chaotic bad, it's not even chaotic neutral, it is just chaotic. And I like this idea of the deck being an item that just appears in times of great upheaval or problems, or if things get a little bit too stable, things have been a little bit too boring, and it just pops up and people start to draw from it, and there's almost like this trail of either, you know, people having a great old time, they've made all of a sudden rags to riches, and then you've got like random like death reapers like going around because someone drew like death.
And I really like the idea that like you come into a town and they're like, oh yeah, but we all know we all know Lord Bombadil. What do you mean? Well, you know, he came from nothing. What do you mean he came from nothing? Well, one day he just bought the town. What do you mean he just bought the town? Well, you know, there was that old castle. One day he just moved in and he was a lord. Like, you know, we just all accepted it.
It's very supernatural-esque, actually. It's just odd this has come up twice this episode.
if I had a pound for every time, I'd have £2. But it's weird it's happened twice.
I quite like that idea of an adventure where you go around following in the wake of this deck, and you can have adventures of trying to fix what went wrong. Or
you could be like... your quest that you're given by your patron or your handler is to like go and work out what's going on.
Yeah.
Like these weird occurrences are happening, and you end up realizing that you're following people finding and drawing from the deck of many things.
Yeah.
That's a cool plot.
And yeah, so like the deck as well, like on that sentient thing, it pops up at those times, it sows its chaos. And you know, you could even have it like the deck needs to be like banished or something. Because if you don't lock the deck away, it's causing too much chaos. It'll appear back somewhere else, because if you choose not to use it, it'll just be like, right, off I go. That idea of locking it away, or it literally having, when you pick it up, there is a force in it that is like, draw from me.
I think as players, when you find the deck of many things, that force exists in real life.
Yeah.
I don't think you need to fake that. I think as a player, if you gave me the deck of many things in Tyranny,
you're drawing
tomorrow,
22 cards.
I'd go, James, I'm going to draw 3 cards right here, right now.
Yeah.
I'd either draw 3 cards or 7 cards, because those are the magic numbers.
Yeah.
And I'd do it. I would do it then. As soon as you gave me the deck, I'd think about it for 3 sessions and then I'd do it.
Yeah, but like, you know, if you need that roleplay reason, if you've got a weirdly sensible character that, you know, give them that, the little pull. But no, I really like these supernatural-esque going around, you know, solving the problems, and then going, oh shit, it's this weird deck of cards. And then obviously your players click and it's like, oh my God.
It's the deck, yeah. I also think what's really cool is, again, good luck finding it in the book, but there are character options to create characters as players that were forged by or affected by the deck of many things being drawn from. So you could play a character who was like, oh, I was once a noble lord of a town. My father's father came into money and we bought this keep, and slowly but surely, you know, through the generations, we became these great men who looked out for this town. And then I drew from the deck of many things, and I lost it all. And now I have nothing, and I'm a pauper. Like, that's, you can make those characters.
Yeah.
And that can be fun. That can be fun to play with.
I just had another cool idea. So we've got the dungeon, yeah?
Yeah.
What if, this would be a really fun quest, I feel like. The deck of many is locked at the center of the dungeon. And you are tasked by someone, you use the telescopic teleporter to breach the dungeon and extract the deck of many. And then, you know, you got to fight your way back out again. And, you know, do you use the cards while you're in there and get back and find you don't end up getting paid or something like that? Or do you resist that urge to use the deck whilst you're in there to help you or hinder you, as the cards say, and get some kind of reward at the end when you hand the deck over to someone else, which then makes a whole new campaign.
What's fun as well is, like, the deck is kind of like a more concentrated wish. I remember when we did our one of our Halloween specials, we did one of the many versions of Strahd Must Die Tonight that we played. At the end of the night, you were fighting Strahd, and what, you'd found the luck blade that lives in the that's hidden in the catacombs, and it has a wish in it. And I think you used the wish, and you all came together to try and work out the word. I think you took about 15 minutes to work out the wording of, like, and it was, oh, we want to have available to us all of the abilities and spells and actions and reactions that we would have as if we had finished a long rest. And instead of just having a long rest, just everything that you could do, all of your spells appeared on spell slots across the floor. So, like, 50 spell slots just appeared on spell scrolls appeared on the floor. And, you know, there were potions that would give you your actions back and things like that. And so you were quickly suddenly, like, picking up spells and trying, like, opening random scrolls and trying to use them. Like, that kind of energy that you get with a wish spell is the deck of many things. And to have a session where you're running through a dungeon going, well, shit, we've got to draw from the deck again. Like, insane. That it's absolute chaos. Great one shot idea, and you could manipulate the rules of the deck, in that scenario in a one shot, and say, okay, you can draw one card from the deck at a time, whenever you want. That's just how it works.
Oh, I feel almost like it kind of takes away from the deck a little bit. Actually, turning the deck really into a tool, where if somebody's got the cards, you can swap out. So say you could have, like, a dungeon delving deck. And it is solely there to help you get through dungeons, or you can have an exploration deck. So if you're traveling and you're out of food, you go, right, and you can get food, or you end.
There are some other card-based magic items in the book.
Yeah.
That's not one of them, but you could make something like that based on some of the templates that are in the book, I think.
Yeah.
Which is a great magic item. Yeah, fuck it. Why not? That's a cool... Like, there's the Cartomancer feat allows you to use cards as a focus, as a spellcaster. You know, these cards... Basically, if you want to play Gambit, these things exist in the book.
Yeah.
Just good luck finding them. Take a shot every time I say that.
I know. I was literally just thinking we keep coming back to that.
It's just so frustrating. It's the one thing that's holding this book back massively for me. The other thing I was going to say... was on the tip of my tongue and I might have just lost it. So there are some cards in this deck that are like, some of the classic ones and some of the new ones, the effects aren't obvious. So, for example, one of them, a fiend, what's the other version? Not a fiend, a...
You get someone that starts to follow you, don't you?
Yeah, but I'm being an idiot. There's a fiend and a type of creature. Fiend. Demon, fiend. There's another one. I can't remember what it is. It's really annoying me.
I've opened the contents page for opening.
No. It's more simple than that. In D&D, monster types. What monster types are there in D&D? Beast. Monstrosity. Demon, fiend.
Angel. Well, celestial.
I don't know what it is. I don't know what one I'm thinking of. Anyway, the point is, you draw the card and a random, like, devil or a fiend or a demon suddenly hates you and wants to kill you and starts hunting you. There's one that like a body rises from the dead and starts hunting you down. Doesn't have to be near you, could be anywhere in the world, but it starts hunting you down. You draw those cards, you don't know they're happening.
Yeah.
Like it, you nothing for, immediately for you changes. So you could like create a whole story for an NPC or a character around that.
Yeah. Like I feel like there's a card, I can't remember which one it is, where you have like, it is like a Reaper that follows you. That yeah. comes after you. And like, that would be a good quest. How to get rid or escape the Reaper that is constantly on you because you drew from the deck.
Or even you're hired by someone to keep them alive because a Reaper's coming after them.
Yeah.
Ooh. That's cool.
Yeah.
There's lots of opportunities in this book. And I think the takeaway is it's a good book. It's good content. The Deck of Many Things is a cool magic item. And if you want to use it and you want to use it well, this book helps with that. And it's really nice to have the cards. The cards are nice. The box that they come in is lovely. It's a cool item to have, especially if you're playing in person. As someone who plays mostly online, it's a shame I don't play in person. One of those products that makes me think, oh, I wish I played more in person. But hey-ho, it's nice to have on the shelf.
Yep.
It's just let down by the layout. And it is frustrating. It actually might be one of the only few times where having it on D&D Beyond is better. And I don't say that lightly, purely because you can go, show me all the magic items in this book. Yeah. And it will just give you all the magic items. I mean, I'm not going to go and buy it on D&D Beyond. Why would I do that? But yeah, you know, yeah. But then swings and roundabouts, you're not getting the physical cards. So, yeah, I don't know. I have no other parting words other than if you're going to draw from the deck, draw three cards. It's a good number.
Yeah,
James, good, what do you have to say?
Good, solid number. Just embrace the chaos. If that deck appears in your game or you're putting the deck in your game, you must embrace the chaos because that's what it's there for.
Prepare, but also embrace.
Yes.
Okay, I think we're going to end it there because we've gone over and my migraine's starting to come through and it's killing. So go and use the book. If you're going to buy it from the Dice Dungeon. They're wonderful guys. The link's down in the description. And thank you for listening. If you want to support the podcast, you can by going to either our partners and using our codes or by coming directly to us via Patreon. The link is down below. That's the best way to support us. If you want to join in on the conversations, if you want to get involved behind the scenes, all that kind of stuff, the Discord is the place to do it. A link to that is below too. As always, James, it's been an absolute pleasure.
For me too. I'll see you next time.
See you later.
Thanks for listening to the We Speak Common podcast network. If you enjoyed the show, be sure to leave a review on your platform of choice and share us with a friend or D&D group near you. If you'd like to directly support the network and the production of new shows like the one you heard today, head to the description of this episode or our social media pages for a link to our Patreon page. You can connect with the show on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook at We Speak Common. The network theme is Street Dancing by Timecrawler 82 and is held under a Creative Commons 4.0 license. You can find it on the Free Music Archive.